I'm excited about this chapter, as I've been excited. I said that. I think I say that every week. All right, I'm excited about the book. The book's been great. I've enjoyed the book a lot. I've learned a lot. I hope that you have enjoyed it as well. And as I said in my prayer, it's just really a story of how God works in ordinary lives, how he's carrying out his plans. And last week we saw how, you know, Ruth just happened to come to a certain place, and she just happened to meet a certain individual who happened to notice her. And all of these happenings were happening, and then we left Ruth and Naomi during the entire harvest, and there was a period of time when Ruth and Boaz had a chance to kind of get to know each other over that time. And now we're going to pick up on that story today, and we're still going to be looking at how God is working in the lives of these individuals through their ordinary circumstances. But here, we're kind of going to make a little turn, and we're also going to see something that we talked about last week about how God is working through the actions of individuals and the plans of individuals. And so we're going to be looking and how these individuals take certain steps of faith, and how those steps lead to discovering what God has for their lives. Guys talk to me all the time about ice fishing. I have a few friends that kind of always ask me if I like ice fishing. I always tell them, you know, it's going to take a lot to get me out on the ice. I'll go because I want the, you know, camaraderie and hang out with these guys, but that ice needs to be like 24 feet thick for me to really feel safe before I get on the ice. There's this guy, he wanted to go ice fishing for the first time. So the day before, he noticed a little frozen pond or something out there, and he's like, that looks like a good spot. So he wakes up early in the next morning. It's dark outside, but he kind of knows the general area where he's going. He goes out to this patch of ice. He gets his auger out. He's got a hand auger. He does it traditional way. He starts drilling the hole. All of a sudden, he hears a loud booming voice. There are no fish under the ice. He's kind of startled. He's like, whoa, wait a second. I know it's early. I haven't had my first cup of coffee yet. You know, maybe I'm just so excited. Maybe I'm just trying to psyching myself out. He's like, okay, I'm going to go drill another hole. He goes to this other place and then starts, as soon as he puts that auger down, he hears the voice again. There are no fish under the ice. He's like, all right, this is really freaking me out. Right? He looks around, he makes sure no one's around. And he says, okay, I'm going to try one more time. And just when he takes that first step, he hears it again. There are no fish under the ice. And then he gets down on his knees at this point, and he looks up and he goes, Lord, Lord, is that you? And the voice responds, no, it's the rink manager. Come on. How many of us would love to have a direct line to God like that, right? How many of us have sometimes maybe thought we heard God's voice and maybe kind of heard it incorrectly? How many of us, I know I've prayed, when we're when an opportunity presents itself, like this guy, and we pray to God, Lord, you know what? I don't know what to do here in this situation. Can you just come down, have a seat in the office? Can you sit and talk to me and tell me exactly what you want me to do and exactly how it's going to work out? Wouldn't that be nice, right? This is not faith, is it? We often look at our circumstances and we often look at God's will in our lives as this big puzzle with all of these pieces spread out, and we're looking for that one piece that is going to tie everything together instead of taking it what? Piece by piece and seeing God's will or God's purposes and God's blessing for our lives develop as we take those little steps of faith. Ruth and Naomi are in that situation right now. Ruth and Naomi are in this period of time, and now God has brought about this interaction with Boaz. Naomi is watching this happen, and she's going to figure out what to do with this opportunity before her. God's hand, God's plan works out through man's planning, through man's actions, through man's steps of faith, and that is exactly what we are going to be looking at today. Sometimes I think part of our problem in life, and I do it too, is we over-spiritualize or we over-complicate figuring out what God has for our lives. Instead of just trusting in Him, praying through those things, and then moving forward in faith. Sometimes we make it so difficult when sometimes it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. We're going to be looking at 3 steps of faith today, and I made these as simple as possible, just so we don't overcomplicate things and how these individuals take these certain steps of faith and how God is working through these steps of faith and how they discover God's wonderful purposes for their lives by doing so. First step of faith that I see here in our text is plan it. Plan it, verses 1 through 5. Gonna fix this thing. All right, there we go. So chapter 3, book of Ruth, verses 1 through 5. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maid you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies. You shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." Ruth said to her, "All that you say, I will do." Alex Bowen was hungry. He was so hungry, he was out, and it was 2 a.m., so he decides to stop by the only thing that is open at that time in his area, and that was a Waffle House. How many people have been to Waffle House 2 a.m. in the morning? Yeah, got some hits. Skip, all right, that's great, Skip. Skip was out there the other night, right? 2 a.m. So what does he do? So he goes into the Waffle House, and he's so hungry, but he's waiting for like 10 minutes, and nobody is there to take his order. So it's open, you know, they're open all night long, and he's waiting for 10 minutes. So after waiting a long time, he decides to take matters into his own hands. So he finds the lone employee, and he's asleep. So after he finds him asleep, he goes behind the kitchen counter and meticulously cooks the food that he needed. He finds all the ingredients, he plans out his little sandwich, he reads the menu and how to make it, and he begins making his double Texas bacon cheesesteak melt. And you know I always have to put up a food picture early on in the sermon just to get you guys really paying attention here, right? So while doing so, as he's making the sandwich, he's taking selfies and he's posting them, of course, on Instagram and stuff like that. He also took a selfie of him paying for the food and then cleaning up the grill afterwards. Representatives from Waffle House applauded his initiative and also his cooking skills. However, they cautioned against similar behavior, saying patrons should avoid going behind the counter for safety reasons. They say no word was given as to what Waffle House, why it was so understaffed, or why how the lone employee might be penalized for sleeping on the job. What is clear, however, is that a man or a woman who really wants a double Texas bacon cheesesteak melt can be motivated to take action above and beyond the normal call of duty. Naomi takes the initiative here. Naomi wants something extremely special for her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Notice that this action that Naomi takes is not for Naomi's benefit. It is for the benefit of Ruth. Where does Naomi start out in this passage? "Shall I not find for you security?" Naomi sees an opportunity before her, takes the initiative with that opportunity, and does it all for the sake of Ruth. Remember, Naomi prayed early on for what? Rest and security for Ruth. Naomi now sees an opportunity to answer that prayer. I want to point a few things out here as we get into this text here. Because once again, all the commentators and many people, not all of them, I'm not disagreeing with all the commentators, but a lot of commentators look at Naomi and look at this scheme and they say, bad Naomi. Naomi's not waiting on God. Naomi's taking matters into her own hands. She just should have let it all play out. And if we're watching this, if this is a movie, right, and we're watching, here it is, and there's Naomi, and Naomi pulls Ruth aside, and she starts planning, we might be like, Naomi, this is a terrible idea. Why are you interfering, Naomi? Why don't you just let this relationship work out? But I want to say that actually I think that God is working through Naomi and that God has brought Naomi to this point, and Naomi sees this as an opportunity that God has brought before her. And this is where our faith begins. In our circumstances in life, whatever it is, and here it's in a relationship, but whatever it is, faith sees God presenting to us an opportunity, and then faith looks at that opportunity and then makes a plan. And it plans to be successful. Ruth and Boaz have spent time together. Remember, the last time we left them, it says that Ruth was with Boaz through the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. This is a period of time. So Naomi is kind of watching these two lovebirds together, right? And maybe she sees Boaz kind of give a little glance over to Ruth, and Ruth kind of like, there she is. So she's looking at what God is doing. And go back to where we started from, right? After Ruth comes home and she tells Naomi everything that's happened, right? Naomi's putting two and two together. And that's exactly what one commentator says. Naomi is confident in Boaz's integrity, in the person she has seen, and she's also, most importantly, confident in the hidden hand of God to govern his reactions when he wakes, because this plan is full of risk. This plan that Naomi has, and this is why a lot of commentators and people are like, this is absolutely crazy, because this plan can put at stake their reputations, and it puts at stake their livelihood. This plan can be severely misinterpreted. But faith sees opportunities, and faith takes the initiative, and faith plans for success. One commentator says this: at the spiritual level, planning means taking the initiative. It's not about sitting around until you are absolutely certain that God is calling you to a particular task, direction, country, ministry, relationship, nor is it waiting for the doors to open so that you can walk through them easily. Planning is an act of faith. Jesus never told his disciples to wait for an invitation. He told them to go. And as we go, and I want to just preface all of this with these, this is doing things that are allowed in Scripture, that are not immoral, is not using the world or the worldly ways or anything like that. And all of this is to be bathed in prayer, but at some point, we need to plan. And we often go back and forth and we're like, well, how do we know the difference between God's plans and man's plans? You tell me, if we're walking in faith and we're trusting in Him, name one individual who does know the difference. We're not going to know until we what? Try. Make a plan. Planning is an act of faith, and planning is the way that we are able to figure out how to use God's opportunities that he is presenting before us. And all of this is in the realm of a relationship. We don't know until we try. And the plan that is made here is one that is very, very detailed. And it is a plan that is made to be successful. So I see three things here about this, about faith and planning. If faith takes, it's based on an opportunity that's presented before us. This, it's not being pulled out of the air. This is something that Naomi sees that God is doing, right? So then faith then makes a plan, and sometimes that planning and that opportunity involves some risk. And that doesn't mean that the plan is wrong, just because it involves some risk. And this plan particularly involves a lot of risk. And this plan is planned for success. As I said earlier, she wished these same things for Ruth, rest and security, and now she sees here an opportunity for an answer. As another commentator says, that believe here we see, and this models the way in which divine and human actions work together. Believers are not to passively wait for events to happen, but they are to seize the initiative when that opportunity presents itself. She is thinking this is an opportunity from God, and she is sensing that God is doing something here. As I said, go back to our last chapter, and she's acting on that now. We must not over-spiritualize faith. Faith is extremely practical, and faith makes a plan. What happens sometimes is what I call paralysis with analysis. And we just overanalyze something to the point of not moving at all. Let's remember something. Either way, that's an action, right? If I say I'm not going to do anything, guess what? You just planned something. You've planned not to do something. Not doing something is actually doing something. It's doing nothing. Or you can plan to do something. That's an action too. All of those take faith. It takes faith not to do something, just as much faith as it takes to do something. But we're never going to figure out until we try. And I want us to see that she's planning for success. Sometimes we can look at the plans that we have, right? And we can be like, oh, well, that's using worldly means. You know, she's taken things of the world. Notice what she tells her to do. This plan is extremely detailed, and she wants it to succeed. She says, hey, put on a potato sack, right? And make yourself all dirty. And he's going to see how spiritual you really are. And then he's going to be like, and if, you know, you think about it, he's like, man, if he goes after you wearing a potato sack and dirt and smelling like a pig, that must be God's will, right? Is that what she tells her to do to make sure that, you know, he really likes, you know? And I want to piggyback on what I said last week. Character is the most important thing, absolutely. But that does not negate attraction to an individual. And here she wants Ruth to have the best success possible. She tells what? Do your hair. Put on some makeup. Smell nice. How many people put on deodorant today? Maybe, wait a second, don't answer that question. You might not want to know that. Look at how basic and how practical it is, but it is a plan for success. She wants to improve her chances. And we can look at that sometimes and we could be like, that's worldliness. We shouldn't be doing those things. We should just let God do his work, right? I mean, think about it in just a practical term, like how we've redone stuff in our sanctuary, in our church. Is that faith? Absolutely. Are we using the creativity that God has given us? Absolutely. Do we want to make our church or ourselves presentable to others? Absolutely. Is that okay? Sure. Should we trust in those things? No. Our ultimate trust is in God, but we use the creativity that he has given us, and we use the things that he has given us in order to be more successful in the opportunities that he presents before us. She doesn't say put on a potato sack. She doesn't say, you know, be praying the whole time around him or anything like that. She says, look, make yourself nice. And the clothing is a symbol or signifies to him, if she was wearing the widow's clothes during this period of time, and if she got these new clothes, it signifies to him that she is now available. And then I love this third and final part here. And we see that throughout this whole section that Ruth is really trusting in God as she places her future in the hands of other people. She tells him to do something that has been, I think, really misinterpreted, where she tells him to lie down at his feet. And everyone's like, well, you know, that means, and then to uncover his feet. And people are saying that she uncovered all the way up to his private areas, which is just incorrect, because of when he wakes up, he sees her at his feet. That's what he notices. But I think there's two reasons for the uncovering of the feet. First of all, it's a submission and it's a symbol to Boaz that Ruth is now placing herself under his care. And especially because given the response that he gives and given what she says to spread his covering over her, that is symbolic of the uncovering the feet. But I want us to see something else here. I think it's extremely practical. And this is part of the plan. He's winnowing out in the night. So they winnowed at night because the breeze was a lot more controllable. During the day, it could have been all over the place. So this was the best time to get a good breeze. So there he is out at the night. They would all sleep by their grains at the threshing floor so no one would steal that. But what happens when you uncover your feet at night? You wake up. You get a little chill. And I think that she tells her to do this just so that she wakes up, and he wakes up in the middle of the night, and there they are alone together and when everyone else is sleeping, and she's able to talk to them and work out this plan. We have to see that many times God presents to us an opportunity and gives it to us to work out a plan as he works through us through his Spirit. And here we see that it is Ruth submitting to the plan of another. That Naomi is given charge over Ruth. She wants the best for her, and Ruth submits to this plan and then goes through with it. God likes a good drama. And sometimes it involves some planning. And once that planning is done, we then need to just carry it out, which leads to our next step of faith. We do it. Verses 6 through 13. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. That is how this section starts out. Plans it, and then what does she do? She goes down to the threshing floor, and she does all that her mother-in-law commanded her to do. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, just like she said he was going to do. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and he bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" She answered, "I am Ruth, your maid." So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you, as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." It seems that Naomi's plan is to kind of alert Boaz to his possible ability to redeem Ruth. And that's kind of what she's doing. She's trying to get him to see that he is a close relative and that he can be this kinsman redeemer. In October 2019, Bert Terhart boarded a 40-foot ocean-faring sailboat and set sail from Victoria, BC. His objective was to become the first American to ever circumnavigate the globe solo. Using only a sextant, pen, paper, and almanac for navigation, he made his trip. On July 28, 2020, after 267 days at sea, he sailed back into Victoria, having accomplished his goal. While on the open seas, he faced extreme weather, regular 12-foot to 14-foot ocean swells, unforeseen ship repairs, and sleep deprivation. But in spite of all of these dangers, this man was dubbed the safest man on earth. When Terhart set sail, he never heard of COVID-19 or words like social distancing, flatten the curve, or shelter in place, or self-quarantine. And while he was on the open ocean, he was safe from all of it. In a recent interview with Travel and Leisure, he described what he hoped to accomplish by his journey. He said, I wanted to inspire people to keep taking those steps forward. Once you take the first step, the next step is easier, and the step after that becomes easier. The author says this, following God often means a journey into uncertain seas. This often puts us in a posture of procrastination. We delay for a season, waiting to feel more certain or safer. We need to take the first step and the next step, and we'll discover that each step gets easier as we do. And also, we are never safer than when we are in the will of God. In fact, we are the safest people on earth. I really like that illustration because we can imagine even planning for a sailing trip, right? There's some dangers involved. There's some risks involved. And maybe we have people in our life that would say, you shouldn't do that. The risks are too great. And notice as that guy leaves the safety of his home and leaves the safety of that which is familiar and known, and he ventures out into this journey, these people at home were all struck with danger. And he is now dubbed the safest man on earth. Often we look at opportunities and we overanalyze them and we allow this analysis, as I said before, to paralyze us. And many times it has to do with the risks that are involved. And there are a multitude of risks that are involved with this plan and this scheme that Naomi has for Ruth. But what does Ruth do? She listens to the plan, she obeys the plan, and she carries out the plan. She takes that bold step of faith. And again, Ruth is an example of someone who has faith in the Lord and allowing the Lord here to move in her, to figure out her path for her life by trusting her hands to other people. She does that by trusting herself in the hands of other people. She does that by trusting herself in the hands of Naomi. And she also is doing that by trusting herself in whose hands now? In Boaz's hands. She's an example of faith. And just like our illustration, you and I are never safer than when we are in God's will. But we need to understand it's a journey into uncertain seas. Ruth, you know, sometimes when we look at taking actions and taking steps of faith like this, and we can say that individuals like this are not trusting in God, that they're taking matters into their own hands. And we can say that they just need to wait. But actually, Ruth is really trusting herself to God. She's trusting that God is going to work through the plan of Naomi, and she's trusting that God is going to work in whether Boaz or another person redeems her or not. Again, she's a bold example of faith. And this plan that Naomi has is not fail-proof. They do not know what the outcome is, and there's potential that they could ruin their reputations. There is potential that Boaz may misinterpret what she is doing, and the family will be disgraced. We often don't want to do things because of the risks that are involved. And this context of this risk is marriage. This is a relationship risk. And we often want to know what the outcome is going to be before we actually engage in the action. And that is not faith. Boaz and Ruth have been spending time together. And as I said, Naomi is confident in Boaz's character, but there's still an element of the unknown. And faith here takes what we know, particularly here about an individual, and looking at what God is doing in our lives, and then steps forward to see what happens next. When we look at this step of faith, we see that it is trusting ourselves in the hands of God. The pictures that we see of Ruth and Boaz alone on the floor, if we ever see images about that, that's kind of inaccurate, because this was part of the risk. There would be a ton of people that were on this threshing floor. And Naomi and Ruth would understand that by going out here, by Ruth going out there in the middle of the night, these individuals can wake up, they can see Ruth at her feet, and they can be like, whoa, what just happened? As a matter of fact, the threshing floor was sometimes a place where some shady interactions occurred. One commentator notes the potential disaster of this scheme. He says that Boaz can just look at Ruth's actions. Remember, Boaz has been what? He's been drinking. And this could either help the situation or actually could hurt the situation. So Boaz can look at Ruth's actions and he could just interpret them as strictly sexual. And just think that Ruth kind of just wants to be with him for the night. Worse than that, he can interpret her actions as that of a prostitute. He could outright reject her based on that notion, and then she would be disgraced and her reputation would be ruined. That's a big risk, isn't it? So why take it? If this is what is involved, why take that risk? Because Naomi knows, and Ruth knows, the reward is worth it. You know, sometimes we look at all the what-ifs in our life, and that's what we do. We throw all those what-ifs out there. What if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? And what we do is we create walls around us with these what-ifs. And I think, I want to flip this on its head. I think actually it is in that environment that you and I are trying to control more. We want to control our lives. We don't want to take chances with our lives. We want to be in the familiar with our lives. We don't want to put ourselves in an uncomfortable position. And we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we feel that we may fail, or we feel that it may not go the way that we want it to go. You think Ruth and Naomi knew all of these risks? I think they did. Now, what if they didn't act on that? What if they allowed all those what-ifs to build up and Naomi just said, you know what, I thought about this, I was going to do this, but guess what, the risk isn't worth it. Oh, we don't know what happened because it didn't, did it? We want to be in control, so therefore we don't take risks with our lives. And this is involved in relationships, and this is involved in ministries, this is involved in jobs, this is involved in whatever we think that God has presented an opportunity before us. We have to take that step of faith so that we know what is going to happen. Life involves risks, and here there is a risk assessment. As I said, she is trusting that God is moving in this direction, and she is trusting in the character of Boaz. So it looks at that situation, it sees that God is moving, and then she moves forward and she steps out in faith, and what happens? It works. The plan works. Can you imagine? Not only does it work, right? It works better than we ever thought it was going to work. He praises her character. He praises her character and he alleviates any fear she may have, and he calls her a woman of excellence, vowing to fulfill this duty if he can. We love this love story, but we often forget what it took Ruth to get here. She had to step out in faith. And I think about this plan, right? And I think about, you know, afterwards, if Naomi was telling people this plan, and they're like, that's a great idea. I would have done the same thing. Great idea. I can't wait till we do something again. And that's because why? Because it worked. But how many of those same people beforehand, if they were a little fly on the wall with Naomi, they're like, you're crazy. Don't do it. Why are you interfering? This plan's never going to work out. But after we know that it is successful, people's minds change. It's always different after we know the outcome, but we'll never know until we move forward. Unless Ruth ventures out onto the threshing floor, unless Naomi plans this clever scheme, we don't have a story. But if she were to share that idea, as I said before, maybe before people were saying that wasn't a really good idea. No matter what the... So we don't know what's going to happen at this point for Ruth, do we? But the plan was a success. The plan was vindicated. He doesn't misinterpret it. As a matter of fact, he praises this move. He understands what she is saying. And he blesses her and calls her a woman of excellence. The effort is vindicated, the intention is praised, and the plan is a success. As long as we know that what we are doing is not immoral, as long as we know that it does not go against what Scripture teaches, then we can be open to such options. You know, I've had a lot of people, we talk about planning for outreach and planning for ministry and stuff like that. I've had a lot of people come to me with some awesome plans recently. These plans involve risk. These plans, we don't know what the outcome is going to be, but we are never going to find out unless we do what? Take that step of faith and move forward and try it. Once again, allowing God to work through the plans of someone else, trusting that He is moving in this direction and seeing what happens. And then we go to the third and final step of faith, which is wait for it, verses 14 through 18. So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. I like how this passage is kind of laid out, very practical for us. We see that it begins with a plan. It goes to the action, to doing the plan, and then it goes to what? Probably the hardest part of our faith, the waiting aspect. In his book, It Happens After Prayer, H.B. Charles provides the following helpful illustration of why God often makes us wait. It says, one hot afternoon, a certain woman walked to her neighbor's produce stand to buy some grapes. The line was long, and each person in line seemed to have been waiting there for quite some time. How many people like to wait in lines? No? You sure? I feel like I wait all the time, and God always is putting slow people actually in my path when I'm driving to keep me patient so that I'm trusting in His timing, but I'm not a big waiter. I like to kind of move forward and get on with things, but here this woman is. She's in line. She's waiting, but she thinks, you know, the grape is worth it. The grapes are worth it. She noticed that each person that got up to the counter, up to this individual, seemed to get really special attention. But there she was, and she kept waiting patiently. She finally made it to the front of the line, and the guy goes, "What can I get you?" And she goes, "Grapes." And you know what he says? "Can you? Wait a minute." So there she is, and now she's really, really upset, right? Because he goes and he disappears behind the building, and for some reason, this rubbed the woman the wrong way. He said everyone in line was greeted warmly, and most importantly, they were served immediately, right? So now we're waiting in line. We've done our part, right? So then you get up and you expect what? Service, right? Full service, someone to greet you and just give you what you want. Not so in this case. She was forced to wait. And she was forced to wait some more. She was offended. She felt that the owner had taken her regular business for granted. And we know that's when we start in our heads, we're like, "Oh man, I'm going to go home. I'm going to write a little review about this store. They just made me wait too long." And we got all upset and we start complaining. She waited longer and she got angrier. Finally, he reappears and he had a big smile on his face. And he presented her with the most beautiful grapes that she had ever seen in her life. And he offers her to taste one. And she said, "I've never tasted grapes so good." As she turned to leave with her delicious grapes, he stopped her and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry that I kept you waiting, but I needed time to get you my very best." The author finishes and he says, "How long have we been waiting in line for God?" He says, "Whatever you do, don't get out of line." Out of all the steps of faith, and we're going to look at this aspect of Ruth waiting here, out of all the steps of faith, I think this is one of our most dangerous ones. And this one is one of our hardest ones. I think planning is easy for us. I think doing the action is easy for us. But waiting for the result, uh-uh. This is where the danger comes in for you and I wanting to do what? Manipulating the outcome. And there is a date, and we may look at this with Ruth, and we may say, "Well, she's not waiting too long, right? She's only going to wait how long? A day? Is that a long time to wait?" If we're thinking that, right, then we're not reading this through the eyes of Ruth or through the eyes of a woman, because something happened. Something happened that makes this waiting torturous. What happens? So there we are. Let's go back to our movie scenario, right? We're watching this movie, and this all's playing out. And our emotions are up and down, right? Because there it starts out, and Naomi has a plan. And we don't know about this plan. We're like, "Naomi, maybe you should just kind of not interfere." Naomi becomes fiddler on the roof, matchmaker, right? And we're like, "No, no, no, this is going to end in disaster." And then we're like, "Oh, well, maybe it's going to work, but we're not sure. We're not going to take part in it. We're just going to let Naomi plan this and then see what happens." And then comes the night, right? The night comes, Ruth goes out of the house, steps onto the threshing floor, and we're kind of looking, we're not, "I don't want to see what happens." Lays down at Boaz's feet, we're like, "This is going to be disaster, this is going to be disaster. Please, Lord, I pray that this works out." And then all of a sudden, Boaz responds so favorably. Woo! We're like, "They're going to be together. They're going to live happily ever after." But wait, what does Boaz say? However, there's another man. And that's the guy right there, Mr. Collins. Boaz is Mr. Darcy, and this other cousin in line, whoever it is creepy, ugly, weird Mr. Collins. And maybe Ruth doesn't know this, but you know this is the guy she's picturing in her head right now. Wait, there's another guy? Naomi didn't say anything about another guy. Hang on a second. I thought you're the guy. How torturous is this waiting now? Huh? Her life is going to be figured out in a period of 24 hours. She can end up with dude right there, this guy, or she can end up with Mr. Darcy. And if she was smitten on Boaz before, which I think she was, right? Then when he does what he does at the end of the night for her, right? What does he do? He makes sure no one sees her. He protects her identity. He's protecting her reputation, and he gives her food. If she was smitten on him before, that seals the deal. She's like, this guy, I love this guy. This guy is great. We love this guy. We want her to be with Boaz. But here, what does God do? God loves drama. He throws another guy into the picture. And this guy's a weirdo. We don't want her with this guy. And now she's at home, and Naomi says, wait. Wait to see what happens. And what do you think Ruth is like on her hands? And do you think maybe Ruth was like, maybe now's the time to wear the sackcloth, and I'm going to parade myself in front of this dude so he doesn't want anything to do with me, right? This is the time where we're in danger of manipulating the outcome. But this is the time where we really grow in our faith and where we say to the Lord, Lord, I'm going to accept the results that you have for me. We allow him to work out the plan that he has for our life. No matter what it is we do, whether it's a ministry event, whether it's our job, whether it's a relationship, we allow God during that waiting period to work on us. And sometimes that's the hardest part of these steps of faith. But it's during this time that God builds our faith, that God builds our trust in him. We planned, we took action, and now we need to wait and see what happens. And we all know that good things come to those who wait. I got this card this week, so I had to throw it up here. Yep, Jana, there it is. Love that card. Good things come to those who wait. It is during this time that God is working out all of these things to give us his best. And it is this whole process of faith, from planning to patiently waiting, that sometimes during the longer waits, we get a greater blessing. In the film Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Harrison Ford plays Indiana Jones, a daring archaeologist who travels the world in search of treasures. In this film, Indiana and his father are searching for the Holy Grail, the cup that was reputed to have been used by Christ at the Last Supper. His father was just shot at the end of their quest. With his father dying, Indiana's search for the Grail takes on new intensity because the cup is said to bring healing to those who drink from it. With his father groaning in the background, Indiana walks ahead following an ancient book that gives clues to guide him through the maze of obstacles to the place where the Grail is hidden. He comes to the brink of a chasm deeper than the eye can see. There's no visible way for him to cross this chasm. Indiana is faced with the impossible, so he thinks. All he sees is the sheer cliff edge and the vast gulf beneath him. Then as he studies this guidebook, his face relaxes in realization and says, "It's a leap of faith." With his father whispering in the background, "You must believe, boy, you must believe, boy," Indiana looks straight ahead, gathers his courage, and slowly raises one foot into the empty air in front of him. With a thud, his foot lands on solid ground. The camera pans to show Indiana standing on a narrow rock bridge, deceptively carved to match the exact outline of the ravine beneath it. Overcome with relief, he crosses the chasm and discovers the Grail on the other side. We'll discover the blessings that God has for our lives when we step out in faith with the opportunities that he provides. And what we'll realize is, just like our friend Indiana, is that that bridge was there all along. It begins with a plan, realizing that God has placed an opportunity before us. We've watched and we've waited. We've decided to take action. It then leads to taking that bold step of faith, moving forward. It may be risky. We don't know what the outcome will be, but we never will know unless we try. And it ends with us waiting to find out the results of our venture. Waiting as God works on bringing about his purposes and as he works on us. I love narratives like this because we can place ourselves right in them. This is how God works his will in our lives. Uses our creativity, uses our planning, uses our decisions to bring us into his blessings. We can all experience the fullness that God has for our lives when we take simple steps of faith. I can't wait to see what happens next week. Father, thank you for the examples before us. Thank you for the steps of faith that were taken by Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, Lord. Lord, and help us to imitate those steps, Lord. Help us to see the opportunities that you have presented before us. Lord, help us to plan within those opportunities, Lord. Help us to take action, Lord. Lord, and help us to trust you with those results. We praise you, and we pray this in the name of Christ. Amen.